Hello and welcome to the home for anime. I am your host, GPC, Great Podcaster Cali, and I am joined by my besto friendo, Drew. What's up, man? How you doing?
Hey, it's good to be back. I'm doing pretty well.
You know, this is the first time that I've seen you in this new setup with your camera on, and I gotta say, this little setup that you've got, your figures and your manga, nice.
I also have actual books too, but they're covered away. They're not important.
No, who cares about literature when we have books with pictures in them?
Yeah.
I kid you
I don't.
not, that is, I kid you not, that is all I read at this point. Even the
Honestly,
light
I read
novels.
More articles online.
Oh,
oh, yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah, yeah. Did you ever finish the, what was it? You were reading like some collection of light novels. I forget which one they were.
Is it wrong to try to pick up girls in the dungeon?
Probably that.
Yeah, it's still going on. It's still going on. I'm trying to get through volume 16 through 18 before season 5 comes out in the fall. So we'll see how that goes. But
yeah.
But I'm getting off course. Drew, I called you here for a specific reason. We're talking about Paprika.
Yes, we are.
So paprika,
you know,
is a spice that can be used in several dishes, including chicken. And did I forget chicken? Also turkey, but chicken.
I was going to make a joke about deviled eggs, but where do eggs come from? Chicken.
Exactly. See,
so, yeah, that's a good
I was reading your
theory
mind
you
on
got
that
there.
One. We've been together
Yeah,
for
yeah,
so
yeah.
long, I just know.
Yeah. Yeah, so just full spoilers ahead, although I don't think that really matters
it
as much with
really
this
doesn't
movie.
Matter with this movie, bro, because what
Yeah.
is Paprika? Help me.
Yeah, for sure. People give me a weird look whenever I say it's my favorite Coen movie, and like I totally understand why, but I think as it stands on its own, I think it's like really interesting. It has a lot there, and it's very hard to dig through. But yeah, like the best plot, just straightforward synopsis I can give is that we live in this world where there exists this machine called the DC Mini, which just allows people to share and enter the dreams of others. We open up to the movie to Dr. Chiba, who uses that kind of like in a non-legal permitted way to give people therapy and just kind of dig through their dreams and see what's up and have them in a more like in an actual like film recorded way look and maybe dissect through what they're dreaming about. Eventually the DC Mini gets stolen, and slowly but surely other people unwillingly get forced to live through other people's dreams to the point where it exacerbates until the actual dream world is slowly seeping into the real world, have like this huge collected subconscious dream realm slowly like take over and like swallow the real world until it's ultimately slaved by the end of the day.
See, that was like over a minute and a half, and I still don't get it. But that is fine because it's amazing. Here's my favorite thing about Paprika. I don't think it's a movie to be got fully.
In what sense? Like,
so
logically?
Logically, kind of, because dreams, you know, I feel like people spend a lot of time, like you said that you spend a lot of time reading internet articles. Well, some of the internet articles that I've come across are about rationalizing dreams. And the only conclusion that I've been able to come up with is that dreams are inherently irrational, because what am I doing, you know, going down a river of gravy, like straight gravy, in a sailboat made out of toenails? What does that mean? What does that say anything about me? What, nothing.
Yeah, you need to drink more water.
I kind of do, yeah. I mean, I'm going to be I'm going to be a bit
That's just an easy response to anything, to be honest.
I'm going to
Everyone
be a
just needs to
bit
drink more water.
I'm going to be a bit graphic. There was this girl who I knew once. We're enemies now, so it's okay for me to tell this story. We were talking one day and she said, "I had a dream about a dog eating a bowl of rice." I said, "Okay." She said it was a wet dream, and I said, "Okay."
She needs to drink less water.
How does any of that? So to me, I think paprika encapsulates that dreams don't have to make sense, but I mean, they're pretty fucking wild and they're pretty cool.
Yeah, I think that approach to the filmmaking, I think, is what leaves a lot of people a little unsatisfied at the end. Like, there is a climax, there is a ramping up point, there are moments in the film at the end where like things are coming and there's consequence happening and there's a blending of realities, but like emotionally speaking, there is no like catharsis for people to latch onto. And I think that is a good approach to the kind of film you're trying to make, where you're trying to capture this logic and this atmosphere that really has no sense. You know, we fixate on stuff. I think people's like come to this movie and rewatch it to try to figure something out about it, when really there's nothing really to figure out about, right? Like, I think the futility of analyzing your own dreams comes to the fact that it's like it's ultimately how you how you posture
Perceive.
yourself against the things. Yeah. Right.
That's actually an excellent point, and I'm interested in what you said about the unsatisfactory ending, because I feel like in a sense dreams are liberating, and what is so dastardly about this villain that we have in this movie is essentially he's trying to take that power away from people. Not necessarily the power of sleep, but that dream power. At least that's kind of what I got
Yeah.
from it. So what kind of ate at me, and I guess this is why I was satisfied with the conclusion, basically, bro is kind of saying let people dream. Dreams are not something that can be contained. They're not something that can truly be manipulated. And almost when you try to manipulate something as natural as dreams, you're basically playing God to the point where an
Yeah.
actual godlike being that is intent on making the world in his own image, you know, something that we've seen several times over, that's who we're dealing with. And then just to go into how
Yeah.
trippy dreams are, a giant baby eats him.
Yeah, and like it's that kind of symbolism and like iconography that like people, they scratch their heads then it's like there's something here, but I don't know what to make of it, right? Funnily enough, I recently finished rewatching all of Neon Genesis as well as End of Eva about like a week before rewatching this movie, and there's a lot of like overlap I see between like the, well, spoilers for over 2 decades old series. You've had your warning, but you know the end of Eva, not the movie, but like the final few episodes of the original series, has people kind of you know, there are no walls. There are no like superficial walls to separate people from each other. You're just kind of fully experiencing people as they are. You know, that's what instrumentality is, right? And in a similar sense, this movie also takes down those barriers between the conscious and this unconscious and the subconscious self. And you know, rationalizes those through dreams. Well, not rationalizes those, but you know, you experience it that through these personal dreams, but also like these cultural dreams. You know, what's really cool about the movie is that even though it is a Japanese animated film, there are like a lot of in like the parade throughout the movie, there are like a lot of other cultural icons within the procession itself, right? This isn't an isolated thing. It can't be.
And I think that is 100% because dreams aren't.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that you mentioned the parade, because that is without a doubt my favorite thing about this entire movie, because the parade and what this movie is so great, because you can interpret it any way that you want to, which goes back to what I was saying earlier about how people try to rationalize and interpret their own dreams, or when they look to others online to rationalize their dreams. The parade, to me, symbolizes so many different things, but the first and foremost is it's a celebration of randomness and creativity all at the same time. Because,
and technology too, right?
Technology interests.
Because it's a DC mini that kicks off a lot of this.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the parade originates, or at least catalyzes, through like the chairman's fear. So the chairman believes that more than anyone, he's the only one capable of making sense of this senseless world, which ultimately ends up being his hubris, his folly, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the stature that he alone can protect this, when it's never meant to remain stationary. It has to keep moving forward. That parade itself is going to keep moving forward,
right,
even if he's in front of it.
And honestly, that is really, that's really brought to the forefront with Kay and Tokita, if you remember them, especially. Yeah, no, Kay, because he had all of those dolls, and Tokita straight up just became a robot. It's really just a rapid spin on everything that's going on inside of these characters' heads. But what's so enticing about watching this film over and over and over again is trying to figure out all of the layering behind what they're going through, because as many times as I watch it, and I got to see it in theaters recently, watching Tokita, he's super into robots, he's super into technology, but what does he do when he's integrated into the dream world? He's a man obsessed, and he's lost control. He's basically everything that Atsuko said he was. He's the immature giant crybaby who has lost a sense of self by doing what it is that he loves. Like, his face is inside of a monitor. He's not an actual robot. He's been enveloped by the machine. So you see the joy, but you also see the anxiety. With Kay, of course, he had, you know, all the dolls, like I was saying earlier. And he's becoming these dolls that are all meant to look alike. And at the same time, he's spazzing out because he hates Tokita so much. So it's like, I would rather have like a million of these that look the same than have to see your face on any of them. Like, he cuts Tokita's face out of everything.
See, I feel, you know, like in those moments it feels like that's like the chairman's influence, and like this is all up to contention. I'm not trying to say this is like the end all be all read of it, but like, you see the chairman is very controlling. That's an aspect of like Dr. Chiba that's who she is in the real world, right? But Paprika is like her alter self that, you know, is more carefree, is more childish, is a little flirty, you know, looks more like Tokita more than anything, right? I feel like whenever she like explodes on him for not paying attention to like any kind of accountability, like I think there's a part of it that has to do with envy. Like, people dismiss him, like Tokita, they dismiss him because he is so childish, he is overconsumptive. I don't think that's a word. He eats whatever in front of him. He doesn't really have a lot of control over himself. Yeah. And if it wasn't for his like genius scientific mind, like, they wouldn't care about him, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like people, whenever they first watch this movie, there's a little bit of head scratching going on at the end where they realize that Dr. Chiba likes Takito, that they end up together, when there's not really like super much that feeds into it, throughout most of the movie.
It makes perfect
but I,
sense.
I feel like she's on
from the get-go.
It does. I think, I don't know from the get-go, but like on definitely on rewatch, because it surprised me whenever I first watched it. But like rewatching it, you're like, yeah, I get it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that is spot on accurate. I think that who Atsuko wants to be, who Chiba wants to be, she's able to fully be that in Paprika. You're absolutely correct. Also, and this is what's so killer about this, and actually, you're going to laugh at this.
I might.
So at my job, we have board meetings. And in this board meeting, basically we have to present everything that we're doing. And my field is film. So I'm having to talk about all the films that are upcoming and all the programming that I'm planning with that. And I started off by saying, so first and foremost, film totally owns, and nobody understood what I was saying. But do you know who would have understood what I was saying? Paprika. Because Paprika is a pure cinephile. Paprika is a cinephile, and I think that adds to her, the word isn't hubris, it adds to her childlike wonder, and it's also how she's able to help so many people, because a lot of Paprika's actions, and you see this later on in the movie, are derived from film. And of course that's how she helps the detective Konokawa, because his big thing is, I do not like movies. And getting to the root of that, honestly, not just Paprika, and of course not just Konokawa, of course this is a celebration of dreams, but the reason that I say film's own is because I think this is 100% also a tribute to film. Not on the scale.
You don't feel like Millennium Actress?
I was going to say, not on the scale of Millennium Actress, but one thing that you will get from every Coen film is an appreciation or some reference to the intricacies or the appreciation of film. So you know how you saw it in Perfect Blue with Mima being wanting to become an actress. I'm pretty sure there was like a scene with TV somewhere in Tokyo Godfathers. Do you remember that, or am I making that up?
Yeah, no, I think so. I mean, the movie ends on him going to watch like the Dreams of Kids or Dream Wonder, whatever Paprika recommends, but like on his way to the theater, or might be in the dreamscape, I'm not quite sure, there are posters for Satoshi Kon's own movies.
Yes, the three movies that he created. And then of course Millennium Actress is, you know, 100% about appreciating film. So what I love so much, Paprika echoes my sentiment perfectly. Paprika knows that films totally own, and uses its characters and its exploration of dreams to say that. Satoshi Kon, of course, being a filmmaker, you know he has to love film, but he really, really loved playing with the cinematic landscape to the point where, and this is what I love about The Parade so much. What was The Parade? There's no rhyme or reason to it, yet you knew that every single thing was put the way it was for a reason. And they used the song to perfection every time they used it.
It's so good.
The cut in and the cut out, it was never like a fade out. It was always a hard cut when it came to the song. You noticed that, right? Satoshi Kon,
I think that's just how the song starts.
I know, but how it ends is never, if you listen to the full song, it does fade out. But they don't do that anywhere in the film, at least not to my memory. Which even if they did, what I'm saying is it's such a masterful use of that singular song, because we hear it like 3 or 4 times throughout the course of the movie. Every time during a parade that is similar but somehow extremely different from the one that came before it. My favorite being the one inside of the movie theater, because this might just be my corny interpretation, but movies are where dreams are made. That's just a cute little sentiment.
I don't know. That feels pretty Hollywood to me, which isn't like an invalid take or anything. Like, I do think there's a lot of connections to be made with that. But for me, it felt like, to me, there's an aspect of the movie where the filmmaker, or like anyone that watches it, and the characters themselves had different opportunities to take in their lives, right? Konakawa's arc has to deal with him ignoring and neglecting this past that he has, where it's like he could have gone into film. He could have kept going into that. He had a friend that was more than willing to go on that journey with him, right? But, you know, things ended differently. So he took a different path. And so with the parade, it feels like it's a procession of like countless and bountiful opportunities that don't really have one clear goal or like end point. You know, something like this has to have, it has too much in it. It is too saturated with aspirations and dreams and cultural significance to ever just be one thing. And I think a lot of characters, you know, you see a lot of dual personalities or like reflections within the dream world versus how they are in reality, because it's a constant struggle. You know, the film opens up with him investigating his own dreams with Paprika as a form of therapy, right? You know, one reason I really like this movie is because, like, you know, you and I didn't have like the easiest childhoods, right? And I know this is like, I know this is usually where you and I go back to when we talk about movies and the stories that really resonate with us. But like a part of coming to terms with like your childhood and stuff is realizing that it wasn't always normal. It wasn't always what was expected. You didn't always get the things that you needed. And a part of you, at least for me, I should say, a part of me is always a little saddened of like the things that could have been, the stuff I could have stuck with as a kid or had help with. You know, part of me feels like, where could I have been instead, right? And, you know, to have a healthier, like, future, I have to understand that I have to let go of that to some extent, right? The time is going to pass anyway. Why should I waste it mourning the person I could have been when I am the person who I am now?
But I guess that does kind of eat at you, which is, I mean, that does explain Konakawa's dreams a lot, which... Yeah, you're absolutely correct. I think, yeah, his dreams were very much attached to, and I was really only saying that about the cinema parade that happened. The other ones, I sincerely thought there's no rhyme or reason, but no, that's an excellent point. And Konakawa's dreams are absolutely about his missed opportunities and about what could have been. I think everything about Konakawa is about what could have been and how it hinders his personal progress, which at the end, he kind of comes full circle with the revelation that Atsuko won't date him.
Well, that's part of it, but also he's living, I mean, the final line he has from his, like, the projection of his friend on the window is telling him that, you know, he's living out the fantasy. He's not a filmmaker, but he's living as a detective that they wrote about and shot about.
Yeah, and that was beautiful.
It's reality born of fiction. Yeah.
There's one thing that I really want to talk about. I know you have notes, though. Was there anything you wanted to get into?
Oh, it's just more so like a reference for me to look at. as we go along.
What I really, really, really loved also about this, and I watched this film both subbed and dubbed, and the dub is magnificent, first and foremost. It is up there with Black Lagoon for one of my favorite dubs of all time. And what is great about this dub is how, even if not every single word is the same, it keeps the spirit of the original script so well. And that's because they don't have anything major to adhere to. They made up some of the wildest lines in dub and sub that I have ever seen slash read in my entire life. And to this day, I still do not know what any of them mean. And I sometimes, just for fun, I will read them. I will read them. And
are you talking about like the like the off the hand shit that the characters say, or like,
yes,
the actual translation?
No, both.
Okay,
both. They're both.
Both. Yeah.
Out of.
Well, that's how dreams work. Yes. You'll say some random shit, and you're like, yeah, that totally makes 100% sense. Yeah, lobsters do cook me at midnight, like stuff like that.
And then next thing you know, Shima's jumping out of a window. Also, his little ass should not have survived that, but I'm glad he did because I liked him.
Yeah.
Also, let's just really quickly, can we talk about the fact that there are virtual bartenders?
Yeah, I don't know how much, just real quick, I don't know how much legitimacy this has, but like some people have said that it's they're designed to look like Satoshi Kon, the tall one, and then the shorter one designed to look like the author of the original book that Kon adapted it from. So that was really cool.
Really? I had no idea.
Yeah.
But no.
I just saw looking up. I didn't look into it much further than that, but I've seen enough people comment about it to where I'm like, okay, I could kind of see that.
Oh, I didn't have anything significant to say. I was just saying, isn't that something? That was just really cool to me.
Yeah, when I first watched it, I don't know why it stuck out to me. Maybe just because I like the movie a lot. But it just made me think of the bar scenes from The Shining, except this had nothing nefarious in it. I just couldn't think of like any other connections that space must have made.
Mm-hmm. No, it was pretty sick. Now,
yeah,
one of the last things that I want to touch on is Paprika herself. Namely, well, for a few reasons. Paprika, of course, is a product of dreams in several different ways. And I find that to be extremely fascinating because there are men who say, she is the woman of my dreams. And
yeah,
like that, in one sense, it's an emotional thing. But then on that other guy, the guy who is not good, John
the Butterfly Man.
Yeah, John Waters' lackey. He's basically using that objectifiably.
Yeah. So I don't know how.
Well,
sorry, you go.
Yeah. So I was just going to say, basically, we have these two woman of my dream type things, but we also have, and maybe this is just because I've been getting really, really, really into One Piece, I definitely viewed her as, I really viewed her as like this symbol of liberation. And the scene that really sold it for me was when she was transitioning through all of those roles, especially the one where she's a flying Nimbus Cloud. And I'm like, this woman is very much her own person, even in her dreams. She is a personal dream personified, brought to life.
I think the most apt, I think one of the more apt, the transformation she's has, and like it connects everything from like the whimsical nature of like dreams to the childness ambitions and just kind of like that safeguard of the future is like she does like transform into like a Tinkerbell-esque figure, right? And mm-hmm. if we're taking into consideration of like some of the connections it might make to like youth and aspirational dreams and like how one like forms all of these possibilities and paths for themselves, whether or not like they're realistically reachable, you know, that's something that we can all like I think identify with. And I think the part with like where she's getting carved up in that butterfly room, like it was hard not for me to think about it wasn't the connection I made in that was to Silence of the Lambs, and especially for like the dissection and the hollowing of the skin and everything, and of course the butterflies splattered throughout.
Yeah.
Although I think it might have been like a moth in the original, I don't remember. But you know, she is this source of obsession and of self-satisfaction. But you know, part of the reason why her and I forgot his name, the genius doctor
Tokita,
the part of the reason why like Chiba, yeah, and Tokita, like I feel like find refuge in one another is the fact that like Tokita has the reputation that I think Dr. Chiba fears of having if she was to be more of herself.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. So the thing that she likes about him is like, she says it's fun. It sounds like an insult at first, how he just kind of takes everything as is and he never stops being himself. But she says it's a fun part about him too. Right. And I think it's the part that she gravitates toward and that they can find like, a lot of connection and refuge in.
Yeah, she's definitely I love how they reflect on what the other wants, and I wonder if the word need would be appropriate here.
Yeah, because I mean, like, I think they balance each other out, right? Because mm-hmm. at the fight at the end with the naked kaiju dream versions, it's like you have Takita in like his robot form, and then both Paprika and Dr. Chiba go in, and through that unison you get like this weird newborn child or life that is the thing that defeats and fells the chairman's like giant kaiju form. You know, I think at the end all of it has to equal out.
Yeah, because, I mean, hey, dogs are afraid of vacuums at the end of the day.
Sure, I don't know what to make of that.
You're welcome.
Are they seeping out into this call right now?
Well, no, I'm calling the bad guy a dog because he is not a good person, and the baby literally yeah. sucked up all of the energy, all the bad
oh
energy,
yeah okay
and the essence.
I felt considered. I'm
yeah no literally just a comparison. He was a dog, but he didn't have that dog in him. John Waters
did not
do well in that movie.
Oh my God.
That's
the part where
he
stands
like.
Up from the wheelchair a lot of it, but like the part where he stands up and he's like actually walking and like the vegetation is covering his legs and you see the tentacle of roots that make up his lower torso is an awesome reveal. I love that part every time. And his face on the whale. Just that whole end sequence is so good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm a fan. I'm a huge fan of Paprika. Everything from the music to I love how Satoshi Kon, throughout his entire filmography, he never lost his style. I know you wanted me to watch Paranoia Agent and I haven't yet, but I've watched all of his films several times. And you can tell within the first few panels, within the first scene, whether or not you are watching a Satoshi Kon film. And I love that
yeah.
he was able to keep that up all the way to the end.
I mean, he straight up just like reuses the same designs for characters in different movies,
and I
which
love
isn't
it.
A knock on it. Yeah, I think that's a good way to connect them. Yeah, because in Paranoia Agent, there's another detective cop-like character in it that just looks like Konakawa, like just straight up. And he ends up in a similar spot too, which is really nice.
Honestly, just stellar movies, stellar filmmaking, and no, if it's a Satoshi Kon film, it's going to have some of the best animation that you will ever see on the face of the planet. It's
just
so
pure
wild.
Joy.
It is. Even in his darkest film, you can find nothing but joy when watching a Satoshi Kon film, because you know that you are watching a movie made right.
I mean, the fact that notable directors just straight up rip scenes directly from the movie should tell you just how good.
I was gonna say, I have no problem name dropping them. Darren Aronofsky and Christopher Nolan just straight up ripped from this man.
Yeah, I think they. I haven't watched Requiem for a Dream.
Those
I don't think
are,
fully, but a while ago.
Those scenes are beat for beat. Like, I
just
watched,
think they're more interesting here.
I am one of the sickos that watch Requiem for a Dream more than once. Do I regret it? Yes, I do. But did I do it? Yes, I did. And you know what? Beat for beat.
You'll do it again.
Yeah. And I mean, there is nothing wrong with that. I'm not going to say it's plagiarism. They took inspiration from a great filmmaker. That's what film has been about since its inception. That's really what art is about. You see something inspired with, and you see something that you're inspired of, and you apply it elsewhere. So really, and all three of those are good movies. Inception is good, Black Swan is good, and Requiem for a Dream is heavy, but it's good. So, I mean, effort well spent, but we're not going to act like the goat didn't do it first. That's all I have to say about it.
But, like, you know, as I've been saying, I mean, there's also connections he's making to things that have inspired him,
mm-hmm.
you know. And that's a cool thing. He's not shy about it. I mean, the movies end up being a big part of film history, too, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. And I love
God, I really want to watch Millennium Actress now.
I have the Blu-ray, I think, and I have the Steelbook. I love it so much.
Oh, yeah. That Steelbook looks slick.
Bro, it is so nice. Actually, do you know that the Paprika 4K Steelbook sold out in, like, a week?
It's good.
And
I don't know. I feel like if it wasn't his last movie, people might have not have liked it as much.
You think so?
Because Dream Machine was... Yeah, I feel like if he had Dream Machine come out, I feel like that's where Paprika was gesturing toward. I don't know. Oh, a lot of speculation, nothing concrete, but like even now, it was his final movie. It's always going to have that reputation, but like, it just seems like people are really confused about this one, which fair enough.
Fair.
But yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, it's fine. I'm just glad that we finally, cause we've been talking about this film for a while.
Just in Kon in general, really.
Yeah, we haven't gotten a chance to talk about any Satoshi Kon films, so I'm glad that this was our first that we were able to go in depth about. And I've really had a lot of fun. I hope you have.
I did.
That's good.
Hopefully the audience too.
Hopefully. But Drew, I'm fresh out of thoughts. I'm just, this movie just makes me so happy. That's the only way that I can end this.
Likewise. Was this your first Kon, or which one was your first?
I regret to inform
you. This is my first.
I regret to inform you that Perfect Blue was my first Kon.
Why regret? It's a great movie.
It's good.
I know. It's strong. It's a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, man. I'm a lifelong anime fan, but I had yet to see Perfect Blue. So when it came to theaters via Fathom Events, I picked up Ryan. I said, we have to go see this tomorrow. And he was like, all right, let's go. And we went. And we went and saw it on the big screen. When it was over, I said, I enjoyed that, and I'm so sorry. He said, nah, brother, that was pretty cool. But that's the type of thing where if you take the uninitiated, you have to apologize afterwards. I will definitely.
I usually, yeah, it's a good thing of like watching these movies by yourself first, because like I get a lot of joy of showing people Cone. I recently showed a friend like a few months ago, Perfect Blue, and I was able to like just warn him ahead of time. It's like, hey, this is gonna have some heavy stuff in it. Just let them know ahead of time.
Well, last thing I'll say is Stream Parade on YouTube. Also, 90s Anime Fashion has a video of the composer of Parade performing live with a virtual harp.
Sick.
With a virtual harp. I've never seen anything like it before. It was incredible. And he was so stoic the entire time. It was like when Plankton was playing piano at the Bubble Bowl.
Oh my goodness.
So check that out. But with all that being said, if you want to follow me, you can do so on Instagram at AnimeAlphaGoat. If you want to email me recommendations, you can do so at ouranimehome@gmail.com. If you want to support what it is that I'm doing, then please consider donating to the Patreon or the Buy Me a Tea. I always want to say what the month that I'm recording in, what the episode of the month is, but I'm realizing I do these so far in advance that I can't. But we just did February's, and it was about the Sonic the Hedgehog OVA that came out in the 90s. It was a lot of fun. So for $5, you can listen to that episode along with whatever stuff I come up with.
Oh boy, what a steal.
What a steal indeed. And of course, you get access to the Discord server, which you get access to anyway, but still. It's nice to get a little extra episode, something uncut, uncensored. I really do just say whatever I want on there. It's great.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. Yeah, definitely join the Discord server. But thank you, Drew, for joining me yet again.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's been a while.
And thank all of you for listening. And with that, we are out.